Markets gain as investors look to the Fed's next rate decision. Plus, we'll weigh the challenges and opportunities awaiting UBS after its rescue of Credit Suisse.
So this may go down as one of the great deals in banking. What we don't know is it could still go down as one of the worst.
And the latest on Chinese President Xi Jinping's visit to Russia. It's Tuesday, March 21st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. U.S. stock futures are edging higher today. That follows gains for major indices around the world after Swiss regulators engineered Credit Suisse's takeover by UBS over the weekend. But just how confident can investors really be, given the continuing turmoil in the banking sector and ahead of a key interest rate decision due tomorrow from the U.S. Federal Reserve? Here to help answer that is Wall Street Journal finance editor Alex Frangos, who joins us from our London newsroom. Alex, one key concern for investors this week, particularly in Europe, has been these CoCos, or AT1 bonds, specifically for European banks. That is after the value of those bonds at Credit Suisse were basically wiped out as a part of the UBS takeover. Are you seeing signs that the concerns around those bonds have abated a bit since yesterday?
I think there's been a little bit of relief as people have come to understand a little bit better the nuances of the different types of bonds. These are these very complicated instruments that banks around Europe have issued since the financial crisis to boost their capital buffers, to boost the amount of the money they have standing behind the bank, and that can be basically written down when they get into trouble. And there's all sorts of permutations about how they get used. And the Credit Suisse example was, it turned out to be a pretty extreme case. Everyone got completely wiped out. So that made everyone else holding these types of bonds for other banks saying, well, what if this bank fails? Am I going to get completely wiped out?
And Alex, just to be clear on the wariness specifically around these CoCos, does it have to do really just with whether more bank balance sheets end up weakening, period? Or is it kind of a question about what happens in the event that they do, as in whether bondholders see their CoCos converted into shares or wiped out as they were in the case of UBS?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, in some cases, some of these AT1 bonds convert into shares, so that would leave the bondholder with something. In some cases, they could be written down partially. In the Credit Suisse case, it was zero. And so now investors are sort of waking up and saying, hey, these things have been great investments for the last 10 years, bringing in very high yields. We knew they were risky, but we didn't quite know that they were that risky. You know, we had years of negative interest rates and zero interest rates and this feeling that European banks were very well capitalized. And now we're in this moment where everyone everywhere is saying, is my bank safe? Maybe it is. Maybe they're all safe. Maybe everything's fine. But until we get through this, people are going to start taking discounts on things like AT1 bonds because the possibility that those things go to zero has just gone up a little bit.
Is that part of why the Bank of England has been getting in here to sort of clarify how these CoCos operate, at least in the UK?
Yeah, it's the Bank of England and also European officials in the Eurozone also, you know, came out with statements yesterday saying, hey, everybody, where we are, we're different from Switzerland. What has people concerned is that in Switzerland, the equity holders, the shareholders actually got a little bit. UBS paid 3 billion francs, which means those shares still exist. They are worth something, so they get some sort of residual value. And there's this feeling that if you're a bondholder, you should get paid first before shareholders, because shareholders are taking on more risk. So that's kind of the dynamic going on there. And the European officials and the UK officials were basically saying, hey, if you're holding these things, just know that equity is going to get wiped out before you do. It's kind of a reassurance, but also if your bank gets into a really sticky situation, I mean, it's all going to be pretty bad.
Alex, our final moments here. The next big market event that we know about this week, important caveat there, is the Fed's meeting, which starts today, and we get a rate decision on the heels of it tomorrow. What are investors expecting from that? How is that playing into markets?
Yeah, basically the only thing we know is that they're meeting and that they're going to make a rate decision. We don't know what they're going to do. Markets have dialed back their expectations for a rate increase that, you know, a lot of people thought because inflation was running hot, that job market is hot, that they would go for another half percentage point increase. But the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, the troubles at First Republic, Credit Suisse now has people thinking maybe they go for a quarter point, maybe they don't do anything. They see the whites of the eyes of a financial crisis, and that has such profound impact on the economy if this were to really, you know, ramp up. And so maybe they're saying, oh, we shouldn't take a chance, let's pause, but we'll just have to see.
That was Wall Street Journal editor Alex Frangos. Alex, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Coming up, depending on who you ask, UBS's rescue of Credit Suisse is either the deal of a lifetime or a massive logistical and legal headache. We'll take a look at what is next for Switzerland's biggest lender after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/wallstreet.
What is next for UBS? It is the question on a lot of people's minds inside and outside the lender following its whirlwind rescue of Credit Suisse over the weekend. UBS may have one fewer major rival now and more clients among the world's wealthy, but it is also left holding its rival's baggage and bearing the weight of being an even more systemically important global institution. And here now to help us determine the road ahead for UBS is Wall Street Journal reporter Margot Patrick. Margot, let's start with the risks in this rescue, namely inheriting the legacy issues that have dogged Credit Suisse for years. Walk us through those. What are we really talking about here? How consequential are those?
So the reason that Credit Suisse ran into trouble and ultimately wasn't able to survive on its own is because it had a lot of problems embedded in its business. And that included a very large investment bank with very large trading positions that UBS is saying it's going to unwind now. UBS didn't have a lot of time to look at Credit Suisse's books. So it still has a lot of working through those trading positions. In that case, it does have some sort of backstop support from the Swiss government on losses it takes on some of those portfolios. There are also some big legal bills at Credit Suisse. It was being sued by investors. There are still some fund investors in Greensill funds that want to sue Credit Suisse. So all of those sort of legacy legal issues and even future legal issues for Credit Suisse, those are all going over to UBS now.
Obviously, Margot, I imagine UBS wishes it could have done more thorough due diligence on Credit Suisse. And yet, just from what you said, it sounds like there is some understanding of what the issues are on Credit Suisse's books. Is that the case, or could there be something lurking here that catches UBS truly off guard?
I think there's always a fear that like more skeletons fall out of the closet at Credit Suisse just because there were so many that seemed to kind of keep tumbling out. UBS, though, got some backstops on losses. It also has liquidity lines. It also could get lucky. Markets could turn. It could sell some assets for more than maybe they were even valued at. Legal settlements could end up being more beneficial than expected. But I guess, however you look at it, UBS just got a lot riskier than it had been. That will come with knock-on effects for UBS that probably haven't fully emerged yet, just as far as things like getting more regulatory supervision. This whole situation will depend on how quickly UBS can move to sort of unload some of the Credit Suisse assets and do things like wind down the investment bank at Credit Suisse.
Let's talk about another kind of drag that comes along with this deal. You've written there are substantial overlaps between UBS and Credit Suisse's books of business here. What do those look like? And why is that, I guess, an issue and not a potential upside?
The biggest issue as far as overlap is UBS and Credit Suisse are the number one and number two banks in Switzerland. So they just are going to have too many branches and too many employees to maintain that newfound market share. There will be systems integrated, technology staff laid off, back office. There's really just going to be a whole wave of people that won't be needed. So that's why the expectation is that there will be thousands, even tens of thousands of layoffs across the world.
All right, let's flip now, Margot, to looking at the possible upsides here for UBS. What needs to go right for us to look back on this and say, yep, 2023 was the year UBS took over its top domestic rival, got more market share, and entered a new, I don't know, profitable phase in its history?
Well, you could see that shareholders were confused how to react to the UBS news yesterday. Is this good for UBS? UBS gets a lot bigger. It's going to be a giant in Swiss retail. It will have a larger investment bank, but also it's going to inherit some businesses that it wanted to be in. So it will get some Credit Suisse bankers in the US that were targeting certain sectors that it wants its clients to be able to invest in. So it's looking for ways to connect its rich customers with sort of investment opportunities. And Credit Suisse has some of that know-how that UBS didn't have. So UBS gets a lot here, and it just really scales them up in terms of who they will be thought about against, you know, sort of the big US investing giants. And so this really helps in some of UBS's ambitions to be seen as even more of a global player. So this may go down as one of the great deals in banking. What we don't know is it could still go down as one of the worst. This banking crisis is still unfolding. Governments are still acting. So this is just one stage, and we don't know what's next.
And Margot, finally, you mentioned equity investors not knowing exactly what to make of this deal in trading yesterday. But there's more to the market reaction here in terms of evaluating the negatives against the positives of this takeover, no?
So we're seeing the reaction is coming through. So we saw Moody's, the ratings agency, changed its outlook on UBS to negative late yesterday. And that was because it's concerned about things like the integration challenges for UBS to make Credit Suisse a part of UBS and to sell the parts and unwind the parts that it doesn't want. So we saw the credit spreads on UBS widen. So the cost of insuring its debt against default got more expensive earlier in the day on Monday as a reaction. So there was a perception of UBS as riskier. So the market is still sort of sifting through what this means for UBS. The good news is that Moody's affirmed UBS's rating, which means that it overall thinks that UBS can handle this, that it can absorb it. And I think that was really reassuring to investors.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Margot Patrick. Margot, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In other news, Japan's prime minister made a surprise visit to Ukraine today. That comes as Chinese leader Xi Jinping visits Russia this week in a bid to position Beijing as a potential mediator between Moscow and Kiev. Xi yesterday attended a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and we are reporting that he also plans to speak with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Wall Street Journal correspondent Thomas Grove has more on these latest moves by the leaders of China and Japan.
Presidents Putin and Xi spoke yesterday about Beijing's desire to try to become a peacemaker in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Today, the two are due to speak about a number of issues, including energy and potentially defense agreements. China has put forth a 12-point paper that outlines its position on the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The West has largely dismissed the efforts, and Zelensky himself has only accepted parts of the plan as acceptable. Japan has unequivocally supported Western condemnation of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and has also joined the West in sanctioning Russia. Part of that is because it fears the possible impact of a war in East Asia itself, where China's military has grown increasingly assertive. And a lot of the West, including Japan, believes that a united message to Russia gives an equally strong message to China.
The International Monetary Fund has approved a $3 billion bailout for Sri Lanka amid its worst economic crisis in decades. The country had approached the IMF for a financial bailout after suspending repayments on its external debt in April. According to the IMF, Sri Lanka will initially receive approximately $333 million from the fund, with the remainder to be received over the next 4 years. The IMF said that the financial package aims to restore Sri Lanka's debt sustainability and mitigate the effect of a continuing recession on the poor and vulnerable. And the Manhattan grand jury investigating Donald Trump has heard from its likely final witness in what could be a last remaining step before potentially indicting the former president. The grand jury is considering evidence surrounding Trump's role in a payment to porn star Stormy Daniels in 2016 to keep her from going public with allegations of a sexual encounter with him. While Trump said over the weekend that he could be arrested as early as today, there is no indication the case is moving that quickly. Sources say the grand jury, which would need to vote on any potential charges, is scheduled to meet again tomorrow. Trump has said he did nothing wrong and didn't have an affair. And finally, could human brain cells one day replace the chips in our computers? Yep, that is a serious idea that some scientists are working on, including Thomas Hartung from Johns Hopkins University. His lab grows human brain cells on a petri dish known as brain organoids that some people have called mini brains. Those mini brains are currently being used to help research diseases and treatments, but Hartung tells our Future of Everything podcast that the same technology could one day work for computing.
It's really about packing information in a different way. This is stored by connecting cells. Yeah? One neuron has connections to up to 10,000 others. And this is, we call this the connectome, is a very different way of storing information, much, much more dense than we can do at the moment.
You can hear more about that and how Hartung and other researchers are studying how brains work on our sister podcast, The Future of Everything. And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.